there was one topic associated with that I wanted to get out in the room in front of the group immediately, and that is the rather controversial emergency designation under the Healthy Forest Restoration Act. So taking you back in time just a little bit, we had tornadoes, severe tornadoes back in 2021, impacted a lot of the region, including Lambton Lakes. And we made an effort to do a salvage timber operation, north end and south end, Kentucky and Tennessee. And we sought an emergency declaration under the Healthy Forest Restoration Act to do that. The unit's request was for roughly 6,500 acres, and it was targeted at that most heavily impacted tornado zone. The wheels got to turning, and by the time the declaration, the authorization, actually came back from D.C., it equated to 86,000 acres. And that wasn't a shift that had been well communicated wasn't actually sought. So, therefore, obviously, is going to get some eyebrows raised. The update on that is that we are almost concluded with the salvage logging operations. We're literally weeks away. We're into that time of year where rain delays and such as that. We don't let the loggers log if the ground's too wet. So it's slowed down a little bit, but we're closing the door on those salvage timber operations. Toward that objective of sort of meeting this concern, conferred with my supervision, and we don't need that authority. We have no intention of using it in the future, and it's a little bit off, a little bit different. Nobody has really requested to have an authority like that repealed, but we're working through that process, maybe inventing a little bit of a process to have that authority repealed, but it's underway. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to put that on the table. That's what's happening. We're basically giving that authority back.
Are you saying, excuse me, that you're going to rescind the 86,000 mandate?
Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying.
Is there any way we can follow on what's going on, the process of that?
Yes, absolutely. I can update you. Now, I'm not updated, so I'll have to gather that information. Like I said, it's not a frequent ask. And so just for reference, Healthy Forest Restoration Act and that emergency declaration is the authority that exists across a lot of national forest units. And so it's a common authority out there that's used in the event of insect disease, wildfire emergencies, things such as that. So,
who made the decision to raise it to 86,000, and what was the reasoning behind
it? Our request for that small number of acres didn't look like the average request, which typically goes out to the six-digit watershed. So we asked for a little spot in the middle of two six-digit watersheds, and so it's a standard protocol to just expand that out to the limits of the watershed. So they thought they were doing us a favor. Yes, sir.
If you're going to rescind that designation, that's good. I think some others here are opposed to that, and maybe it's a mute issue by now, but I'm wondering if I feel like we ought to state for the record the ones that oppose that, and again, that may be a moot point, but I would like the record to reflect that members of the advisory board, whichever one has an opinion one way or another, I would like to be documented in the record. Can we do that?
Fire station alert has arrived.
Yes, sir. Back here.
Yes, sir. Would you say something,
Patrick? Yeah, dude. Morning, guys. Can you all hear me?
Loud and clear.
Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm. Loud and clear.
Okay, guys, thanks for that. I think, just wanted to state, I think timber harvest is the most valuable tool you have at LBL. So just wanted to get out there. I don't agree with rescinding that, and I'd like my vote to show that if it can.
May I ask who this gentleman is?
So, if I could, I'll respond to that. We're not closing the door on timber harvest. All I'm saying is I don't need that authority to accomplish that. We're still going to manage resources. We're just not going to do it under Healthy Forest Restoration Act categorical exclusions that are associated with that emergency authority.
Understood.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Back in March, I started trying to find out what was going on with this. I found out by accident that there was an authorization, and I have requested information. We've done FOIA requests. It was like it was top secret. Nobody would tell us what was going on. What have we got to do to make this more transparent? And also, the advisory board is supposed to be consulted on anything like that, and there was no consultation with the advisory board about that emergency order.
I don't know. I wasn't, and I know this revolving door, and I know the last thing people want to hear is the new person say, I don't know, but I literally don't know, David. So
the question is, for the advisory board being consulted on that, would that be under the current legislation that has the approval?
Yes.
Because that was done, the request was for the sixth order watershed. And as Jim mentioned, approval came back for, those are the acres for the entire watershed.
Well, the advisory board met prior to this emergency order, prior to the salvage law.
Am I accurate in thinking that there was a rule change with the new legislation?
The rule was already in place at the last advisory board meeting.
Yeah, and this was done, I think, in February or March of 22, is when the designation was received.
To your point, transparency will definitely improve. And that one of the reasons that I do not wish to continue with that authority is because of the lack of transparency that accompanies it.
The whole process for that salvage law just bypassed most of the NEPA regulations. Public involvement, everything else. All that was done behind the scenes, like I said, it was top secret. We couldn't get information.
So the Healthy Forest Restoration Act categorical exclusions do forego some of the public involvement processes, which is why I don't want to continue to use the authority.
What was it, a 10-day public comment period, and the public wasn't notified until day 9? The comment period, so there were no comments received. There was no input from the public at all. We couldn't find out what was going on. The way that salvage logging has been done, they're not cutting much at all in the storm path. They're high grading the surrounding area, which was basically an undamaged forest, which is actually increasing the fuel load. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing there should have been public involvement. There should have been consultation on that, and it didn't happen.
How do I do it different? How do I do it better?
Well, first of all, there should be a full NEPA process, public involvement. There should have been an environmental impact statement or analysis done with full mitigation measures. There wasn't even consultation with Fish and Wildlife Service on the endangered species that are in that area. Those are there. There was nothing done to address that at all.
So
it's like just normal procedures to bypass.
We may be in the same spot on this, in that the specific reason why I don't want to walk forward with the authority is that I want to ensure that we're in full compliance with NEPA and that we're fully engaging all stakeholders. So I want to ensure that's happening. With that authority, I have the option to not. And I'm not doing that. Yes, sir.
I have a question and a statement. Can we identify who the person is and his position that oppose your rescinding that designation that spoke on the screen?
I believe that was Patrick Lemons.
And what is his, does he work for the Forest Service?
No, sir.
He's a member of the board that's attending virtually. Beatrice Young and Patrick Lemons are both members of the board. They just couldn't be here in person. Patrick works for Tennessee Wildlife. Is that correct, Patrick?
That's correct. Tennessee Wildlife Resource Agency.
Okay.
And they're board members.
And to his point, I'm going to be very clear that we're going to implement Land Resource Management Plan, which includes management of the forest resource out there. And forest products will result from that. That is, we will be selling timber. I'm just not doing it that way. Yes, ma'am?
So you said y'all asked for, on the emergency declaration, you asked for 6,500 acres. They granted 86,000. And you say we're nearly finished.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell us how many acres have been harvested?
We can. We can tell you the acres. We can tell you the revenue that came off that. We can tell you the volume, how many tons of wood came off that, but not at the second, because those are weight scale tickets, and I would have to work to get you an up-to-date, instantaneous assessment of that.
Okay.
Generally, it's somewhere shy, right about $4 million of revenue that came off that harvest. If that's helpful.
Yes, sir. I just want to point out, I've got a copy of a press release here from March 31st of 2015.
Yes, sir.
In which Forest Service, Ken Tilley was the supervisor at the time, agreed that all timber sales in the future would be restricted to 8,600 oak grassland demonstration area. This was withdrawal of the Pisgah Bay project. It says there were 860 acres that were sold for logging prior to this debate, and they were going to go ahead and finish that. But all the rest of it was withdrawn. The agreement was with the public. This was from Judge White from Lyon County and from Senator McConnell's office, that you were going to limit the harvest, everything else, that 8,600 acres to prove that could work. Because there was a plan there to turn that into an oak grassland savanna, and it never worked. And the agreement was you shouldn't be logging, doing massive harvesting. And a lot of that was secret. We found out by FOIA request that there was a plan to expand beyond that 8,600 acres to create more oak grassland. And the public was not informed of that until we did a FOIA request and found that out.
So, full transparency to the board. The old grassland area was my idea, and that was when I was serving as a wildlife biologist and fire management officer here at Land Between Lakes. I served from 2003 to 2011, and we were in our forest plan revision process at that time. And I wanted all of it. I was pretty young, and I was pretty full of a. Pretty full of vigor for my craft, which is natural resource management, and having studied the species involved and the ecosystem, and my biological assessment was that the land between lakes and much of the surrounding region was much more open and much more diverse in terms of its flora. And I don't know about fauna, but definitely it's much more diverse. And so I wanted all of it. And the area supervisor at the time said, not going to happen. How about a couple of demonstration areas? Which is, that was the genesis of the oak grassland restoration demonstration areas. And that was his intent, was to demonstrate the concept of oak grassland in this ecoregion to perhaps in the next planting cycle expand that outward to other areas. I don't think that the forest plan, as I read it, suggests that only oak grassland would be targeted for logging operations and non-commercial thinning operations and prescribed burning. My interpretation is that it suggests that a wide range of forest management activities would occur outside of that area. But to your point, David, I think the idea is that if you're looking to create oak grassland, from what we're starting with right now, and it's it's fire suppressed condition. That's a big bite, and it's a big shift, and it's not something that people have seen a lot of. So deserves some demonstration and some interpretation along the way. And I'll also be fully transparent, is that all, you know, the tools and tricks of the trade and actually making it happen on the ground, that's an iterative process, and it's something that people have to learn to do. So it's not something that happens overnight, and it's something that does bear some explanation and demonstration along the way. As to Ms. Tilly's letter, you're catching me cold-footed on that one. I was unaware of that. So. I believe you got it in front of you.
This was the result of the Pisgah Bay project, and we found out there was much more planned than what the public had been told.
Okay.
And we had public meetings. I don't know if you were here with all of it. And basically, the Forest Service at that point agreed to stay within that area and not do the other logging project. I don't know where that leaves us now, but.
Yeah, I don't know where it leaves me now. Standing in front of the responsibility to implement the forest plan, and that's not what it says. So, I guess I'd be looking for advice.
Do you have a gender summon?
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
I feel uncomfortable about voting on something I truly don't understand. I need to see what's the pros and cons, and why is it that some of the community don't want to do something, it's supposed to want to do it. In other words, I don't have enough information to go on record saying anything because I don't know what I'm exactly saying. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and excuse me, I understand that. I know how I feel. Others feel differently than me. Others maybe need to think about this and need some time. But again, I would like to see it documented that there was at least some resistance for, I don't know how to do that. I'm not saying we need to take a vote, although I would be okay with that. And I just want it known that I think there are a few people in here that oppose that. And I think they should, I mean, if we're supposed to. And again, Jim is going to rescind that, but Jim might win the lottery and go home, you know?
I already won the lottery. I'm here.
Good. And also, I'd like to correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm not sure about the timeline between the new act and when that area was designated, and I don't have the last LBL management advisory board due to the law. I don't have that law in front of me, but I believe it says the advisory board shall advise the secretary on land management and timber management. I feel like that's a timber management thing. And I would also like to point out land between the lakes may be the only area managed by the Forest Service that has a protection act. So somebody in Washington can add whatever they want to, but in the future, just what happened there, I consider that a conflict with the mission of the advisory board. And
yes, sir.
Real quick, the timeline. This board had met last October. Was the first this board had met since
probably 5 years.
5 years. So that was October of 22. The request for the heifer designation was made in February of 22 for the sixth order watershed. There's no acres in it. Just said we need this within the sixth order watershed. We didn't ask for acres. When he came out, said, you're approved, but it's approved in terms of acres for what those two sixth order watersheds are. That's where the 86,000 acres came from. And so this board met in October, and John gave an update on the salvage operations to the board at that meeting in October of 22. That's the timeline. The law, the new law, was passed on December 29th of 2022. So when we met in April of 23, that's where I went through the morning session of this. I went through the new law that added the responsibility of the annual plan on resource management, including the annual harvest plan. That's the order.
I just have one question to follow up with her, and that was, you know, does the 86,000 acres, will it harm or improve the sustainability of the forest? I mean,
so
yeah, you know, I would love to have more information on this as well. I understand forestry, but
great question. So what the authority, what the 86,000 acres is? Think of it in terms of authority.
Okay,
it's an emergency authority that gives me, as a deciding official, access to different NEPA processes. That's all. So it gives, but you know, it's bounded. I can decide based on certain criteria. There's, you know, safety. There's forest health. It's neither good nor bad for the resource. It's a modified public involvement planning process. That's it.
Just to clarify, so I understand, maybe on the same page, so that authority allows LBO, the Forest Service, to conduct salvage operation or do forest management. It doesn't mandate it.
Correct.
It just gives you that authority. Correct. If you all wanted to do that under an emergency order without having to go through the additional, the public input and the other requirements that NEPA would place on you all.
Correct. And it's neither a mandate it's not a mandate. We can still manage resources, and we can, you know, we still have time and space to decide what is good and or what is bad, and then implement those projects through other planning processes and other regulations.
And when the Farm Bill was first done and these designations were being done, when was it, 2016 or 17?
Yes, sir.
I was in South Carolina at the time. I think we designated almost all our acres because of hurricane, southern pine beetle, those kinds of things. So it was just a designation that we coordinated with the state on and did that across all, I think it was all 630,000 acres of the Francis Mary and Sumter National Forest. Just that idea is, like, so when you get a southern pine beetle outbreak, you know, we could move quicker than taking, you can't take a year and a half to address southern pine beetle or it's going to get on private land. That's where.
Or gypsy moth, or hemlock woolly adelgid, or hemlock ash borer. So that's the situation.
I believe there is, as I understand it, three criteria in that act, or where you can take action.
I'd have to read it. I don't have it in front of me. So yeah.
From memory, and Rick, David, correct me if I'm misspeaking. Is where the Forest Service deems the timber to be
forest health is declining.
Health is declining.
And it's got to be certified over a long period of time. Insect infestations done by the insect survey. And the other is public safety.
Well, I think it says if it appears there is going to be forest degeneration, or whatever you want to call it, whatever I call it. So,
if it's at risk.
Yes. So, it's very broad, and I understand, but and I would like it noted that Johnny Wall opposes that.
There were three criteria listed in that, and none of them were in effect. The emergency was over when the storm was tornado was gone. All the cleanup had been done, all the trails were open, the roads were open, campgrounds cleared. So what was the emergency?
I'm not, David, I don't have the analysis here in front of me, so I'm not armed to speak on it.
This is the thing, we've been requesting information, we couldn't get it.
Also, as for the new law, did the new law say that all previous, I guess, laws were grandfathered in or whatever, or starting henceforth now forevermore, this is how it's got to be done? How was that?
It amended the existing 1998 law by adding and deleting language.
Okay.
And it added, it was three responsibilities to this court. But the four of those, the first one is the public involvement and support for the forest plan, environmental education, and it added the resource plan and the harvest plan, the recreation, education, food and heritage plan, and advice on the WL company. So five responsibilities for the board. And what I want just to clarify, you said oppose that. Just to be clear, oppose having the 86,000 acres or oppose rescinding the 86,000
acres? I'm sorry, what was the last part?
I want to be clear what you're opposing. You're opposing rescinding it or opposing having it?
I'm opposed to having it.
Having it, okay. So you're in agreement to rescind it?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to be clear. Thank you.
And that process is underway.
Okay.
So we do have some updates, and I think John can speak to on our salvage logging operation and other ongoing resource management projects. So, John, I'll let you have it.
All right. So, there we are.
Yes, sir.
Emily has my slideshow. Good morning, everyone. Hopefully, you all are well in the most southern of ways. If I don't start by saying that my mother will turn over in her grave, and my grandfather will probably sit up in his. And hopefully, you all are well. Hopefully, you found the trip here to be enjoyable. What I'm going to deal with today, and Jim, if I may go back real quick, David brought up a point I want to address that a bit. The FOIA process for the information that you requested has gone through the regional office. I just received an email back from the FOIA coordinator that the final version has been redacted and you should be receiving it shortly. But it had to go through that process before we could release it because some of the information that was requested had to go up higher than what we could do it from here. So there's a regional process, which is 45 days from the time we have to respond back, then it has to go through all the different processes and redactions and such. But that will be heading your way shortly. I just received that in the last week. Okay? As it relates to the storm impacts, what we're going to see here is this is the north path, and there's also a south path. What you'll notice that each of these cells is actually numbered 1 through 6 on the north end. The first one being Hillman Ferry, the second one is Jayhawk, the third one is Rockchaw, fourth is Crab Bay, fifth one is Mammoth, and the sixth one is Crab Bay. As far as your acres on those first series of cells, these acres, just so you know, they're going to seem big, but they're not. The reason that I say that is when this incident occurred, there was no way I was going to put anybody out there going in and around it or through it trying to get close boundaries. The reason for that is I've spent 20 years dealing with tornado timber. I know how dangerous it is, and I wouldn't ask my son to do it or my daughter, and I'm not going to ask anyone else's to. So what we did is we actually moved those boundaries out to roads, hard features, creeks, stuff that's not going to move on the landscape. Now, even with that, even though the acres seem large, what we did is we had a very narrow description of what those things were going to be, what timber was included. It wasn't like it was going to be just a big clear cut for everything. The timber had to be broken, twisted without the top. It had to be splintered. It had to be pushed over. It was a very, very, very narrow scope about what was included timber, okay? Anything that didn't meet that criteria, which was included in the contract, had to be added by a Forest Service representative, and it had to be a need for it to be removed. You couldn't just say, there's a good tree over there. I want that and go get it. No, that's not how it works. It had to be a situation whereabouts that particular tree or that area was in an area that was needed for to safely have a road, or that tree had to be removed because it was a potential to fall on some operation that was occurring, or that particular tree had to be removed because of something tangible. It wasn't just a feeling, it was a real thing, and those things are documented, which I do have all of them back in my office here for anyone who wants to take a look at it. So, the Hillman Ferry sale, 330 acres.
The Jayhawk sale was 195. Rock Shop, which is the third one, was 327. Crab Bay was 500. Mammoth, which is the fifth one, was 600. And Clay Bay, which is 731. Now, if you go out to any of those areas now, I can walk you through all of them, and we'll find big pockets of mud cut undisturbed timber. I think that's the big thing. Even though these acres are up here, all this timber, this wasn't a clear cut. I can walk you through all of that stuff, and we can literally walk through some thickets that the tornado skipped across.
Yes. Now, just to clarify, those are project areas. They're not necessarily the extent of the practice.
Exactly. The project areas, and that was based on safety and not actually the impact zones. And what we did with the impact zones is this. We dealt with GTAC and with Missoula Technology and a couple of the other entities. We actually had satellite flights drawn, and then we categorized or classified.
Yes. GTAC is the Geospatial Technology, the Application Center. So it's one of our core service GIS offices.
Yes. I apologize for the acronym. I'm very much for service. Sorry. But what we did is we figured out what was going on, and we classified or categorized impact zones. Moderate. It went from slight to moderate to severe to catastrophic. Then what we did is we actually looked at the most damaged extent of the timber that was being removed. Because we understood at that time, we didn't have the social license to go out there and have a mile-wide timber sale. Not going to happen. So we shrunk it in. And then we shrunk it in again. And then we shrunk it in again to the point where it was the majority of the damage or the severe damage was going to be in this back here. And that's where we operated. And then we further constrained it by describing the condition of timber to be included in the sale. Straight, pretty, standing trees, no damage, can't touch it, sorry. You work around it, unless it's a safety thing, or unless there's an imminent need for something. In that case, we marked it, we have those numbers of what we call add volume, and I can provide that to anybody. But moving on, this is going to be the first series of sales, okay? At the end of this, I will provide you with what the sales statuses are, the level of completion, and also revenues generated as of yesterday. So just kind of bear with me a little bit, okay? Next slide, please. What we're looking at now, these are going to be the South End sales. This is going to be the 400 sale, the Panther Bay, LP, JV, and Gatlin, in order across the landscape, okay? The acres of those you see right beside it, 883 from Fort Henry. Once again, anyone who spent any time down in the South End in that tornado impact zone knows that the tornado that came across the South End on that particular evening or that morning, which was 6 hours after the first one, that tornado jumped and matched. And one on the North End just kind of smeared everything with it as it went. So even though this shows 883 acres, I can take you to a 200-acre block that was untouched. It's just a big green swath with a couple tops that were twisted out, but it's just trees. The same for Panther Bay. There are units in that cell that aren't touched. I mean, entire units that aren't touched because there was no damage. And that damage criteria or classification, once again, was severe damage, twisted tops, broken stems, splintered, pushed over, and the like. So unless the timber actually demonstrated those characteristics, they can touch it. So it's out there. I mean, I can walk you. I would love to walk y'all all through because some of that stuff is still real pretty, real pretty. The third one is LP, kind of in the middle, which is number 9, 272. JV is 879, and Gatlin is 518. Most of those sales were done. How were they able to complete such large acreages of sales in such a short period of time? Because it wasn't a clear cut. There was a lot of green trees down there that's still standing. Just because the boundaries show this doesn't mean that these are the total acreages of work. Didn't happen like that.
And I'll add that there are green trees, green uninjured trees that are fine, that do need to be cut in order to facilitate logging operations. Things such as skid roads and log landings, where they don't naturally occur, where there's not an existing feature on the ground that we can use. And logging equipment's big, and it takes a lot to get it in the woods. So when talking about, I don't want to misrepresent that no green, healthy, uninjured trees were cut. We did cut some, but we had to facilitate access.
Yes.
And logging operations.
There's great big areas that were cut out. Don't be true.
Some log landings are large. That's absolutely true. And so we often face that. Do we have lots of small landings, or do we consolidate? And I don't know the specific operation out there on the ground, the spot you're talking about, but yeah.
And also, I wish this advisory board could go on a field trip out there.
I would too.
When you describe it, it's one thing. When you go out there and you look at it.
I would love to have each and every one of you go out there. As a matter of fact, if you ever decide that you want to go and take a look, I'm sure that my boss wouldn't mind us piling into the truck and going and riding around looking at all.
I would not. I see it as, honestly, as part of the mission. If there's some dissatisfaction with the operations, the role of this body is to advise us on how to do it differently, how to do it better. I'm not objectionable to that.
It's been a month since I've been out to them, but from both the north and south ends, there's tons of trees that were actually damaged that ain't been touched.
Exactly.
They didn't do anything with that. What? And so they've taken the good stuff that was in the area that they needed to, but we've still got a mess out there that I thought that was the whole point.
Well, part of that still, too, is this, if I may address that one. Because of our consultation with the Fish and Wildlife Service, what we were trying to do is ensure that we were leaving an appropriate amount of stems for habitat for bats. The way that the Fish and Wildlife Service documentation or designation was achieved for us is that we were doing our best to ensure that we were leaving at least 5 to 10 dominant stems per acre to provide roosting habitat for bats. So we could have done more, but the intent behind this project was not to do everything. The intent behind this project was to render these areas safe for our users. The intent was to provide or turn this area to a more resilient or a recovering, put it in a recovering state from a traumatic incident on the ground, and to do so in a way that was consistent with the social licensing that we had in that time.
And I'll add that it's a tornado.
Yeah.
We got no control over how that affects the vegetation. So we're all left sort of scratching our heads from a silviculture perspective. Our job is to grow trees back, right? And the decision was only to collect, so to speak, to harvest to the degree we could what was merchantable, and to reduce the fuel load out there, to make it trafficable for future reforestation operations. But the decision does not include any of those activities. So when these sales are concluded, that my authority to do anything out there is expired. And we have to decide what we're going to do to restore that area.
And is that in the plan that you're going to go over later today?
We're going to talk about it. I don't have a plan. I don't want to misrepresent that. I don't have a plan yet. I'm looking for advice. So to that point, logging systems and logging as a business, some of the stuff out there is simply not merchantable. So it could be busted up, laying on the ground, damaged beyond the point that if anybody wants to buy it. And if they don't want to buy it, I can't sell it to them. We do have some authority, within the scope of a timber sale contract to insist that they take some of that material, but to the degree we could, we did that. And so what's left out there is ours to manage and ours to figure out.
Also to that point, recognizing what the social licensing was in that moment, we understood that as light of hand on the land as we could to get to this point is where we had to be. We understood that because of the conditions on the ground, we weren't able to do a lot of the surveys, we weren't able to do a lot of those things on the front side, because if I'm not going to crawl through it, I'm not going to ask your kids to or your grandkids to. Now that these areas are rendered safe, now we're in the process of setting up all the surveys to figure out what's out there from a heritage standpoint, from a botanical standpoint. Now what we do from here and through the use of this body is we figure out what is it that this needs to be, not based upon our own understanding of what's on the ground, but on the group's collective understanding of what's on the ground. So
we did what we had to do to make it safe.
Yes.
Make it safer and make it more usable for our force users who are going to be here. What you are asked to do or tasked to do as an advisory board is, how do we get there? What does it look like? We have ideas. Our ideas aren't always right. Our ideas aren't always widely accepted. This group will help us to figure out which of those ideas is the best for those next stages.
And I'll just say that what he said a different way, so that if the point is made, we know a lot, but we don't know everything.
Yeah. Skeet.
Better communication will help.
Okay.
Make that clear, and better communication all the way around will help.
Okay. Sounds good. We're taking notes, I guarantee you.
I want to make it clear that,
sir,
I know that we're scheduled for every 6 months or something.
Say that again?
We're scheduled to meet every 6 months.
Yes, sir.
I am available anytime you have a question or anything. You can feel free to reach out to me, probably other members of the board as well, but you can definitely reach out to me anytime.
And being brand new, I'm not fully versed in all of the FACA rules, but I do know there are some rules wrapped around side meetings where we're collecting advice. So thank you. I appreciate the heck out of that. Hope everybody's got my cell phone number by the end of the day, and we'll talk, but we've got to stay in our rules. So, yeah, yes, ma'am.
So can you tell me what is the public objection to what I just saw? I'm trying to get information.
That's not the 86,000 acres.
Is that because he brought up a public objection? So what is the public objection? I'm trying to find out.
Well, my objection is they asked for 6,500, and someone up the hierarchy gave me 86,000, which is half of LBA. And that's too broad-reaching, in my opinion. It is too broad-reaching, the criteria, although specified. And I know you gentlemen are foresters, but if that were in fact acted today, they could say, hey, we need to go out here and cut 30,000 acres. And they would have, they have the authority to do that. And don't have to go through public awareness, other things. So that's my objection. I feel like in any of those criteria, those three criteria that are listed, I mean, I feel like we would have time to meet. You know, there could be a special call meeting, especially if it were going to be an emergency, I think they have enough time to go through the normal process for all three of those criteria. The pest thing might be a little critical, in my opinion, but that gives them a blank check to go out here and cut 86,000 acres, which you wouldn't see a tree in LBL if they did that. Very few. It's half the LBL. I mean, they probably wouldn't clear cut it, they would cut the marketing. But I don't know. Depending on which criteria it met would depend on their management practice.
I will ensure that there are trees on LBL, plenty of them, I promise.
Yes, sir. So does the authority, to that point, and maybe some considerations surrounding that, does the authority have stipulations?
It does.
Okay,
it
so does. So you'd have, in order to use that emergency clause or provision, you'd have to meet certain, like Mr. Lamp said, okay, we have a pest issue, we've got to address that. Is more time sensitive than might be allowed under normal legal circumstances. And so similarly, there might be other criteria that have to be met to be able to use that authority.
Yes, sir. In addition to a requirement for ongoing public collaboration as well. So, and the way that evolves is taking the southern pine beetle example, just as one, because it's really good. When southern pine beetle erupts, it's not only affecting national forest. It's affecting any other federal lands, state, private lands, and we have a fairly decent apparatus for tracking and on you know, the beetle in particular. And so it's sort of a known thing, and awareness of the likelihood of an outbreak is arising as we get to that point. So that would be, you know, a good example of that ongoing collaboration. And then we would say, yeah, it's time. We got to do something. We got to get ahead of this beetle to protect, you know, you never outrun the beetle, but you can protect high-value stands like red-cockaded woodpecker areas or something such as that. Try to get ahead of it on the high-value areas. So commercial timberlands, a lot of times we try to get ahead of it to prevent it spreading through commercial off the national forest or onto the national forest, you know, so, as an example. But yes, it has requirements and stipulations. It's not carte blanche. It's not, you know, authority to you know, just go clear cut. Not included in that authority.
Okay. Do you still have to be consistent with the area plan?
Yes, sir.
Plan?
Yes, sir.
What nothing about the core area?
Same. I'm on page 36 of our plan, and I'm not going to quote it, but what I will say is that this does exist. One of the tenets that allows us to do work in core is insect and disease, public health, and fire.
It says in the management plan that the purpose for the core areas is to allow nature to manage itself, including if you have the natural openings created by storms, by insect infestation. All that's supposed to be left alone in those areas.
In some, if I may, in some instances, you're right. However, in this one, I feel as though it would have been disingenuous as a government employee who's serving everybody in this room to allow that amount of basically fuel loading to exist. If it would have sparked up and started burning, the lake might have stopped. What I can say from my desk, if it had sparked up and started burning, I was not going to ask a single one of my firefighters to stand in front of me.
And
because there's no way we would.
And on that note, just to say it again, we're not done with these areas. They're not restored. They're not okay. We have follow-on actions that we do have to do. Fuel loading is still high. It does in some places approach upwards of 50 tons per acre. So we're going to have to be creative about how we mitigate that, how we manage through that, probably for the next 10 years or so. Yes, sir.
I may be beating a dead horse to death here again, but when you requested that 6,500, wherever that request goes, did you have to provide a map showing who it was?
We did.
All right. When they added that 86,000, was there, can that be anywhere, or was it an
We're tagged in this.
The request was for within the watershed. So you think this is within the watershed, but the way those designations are, it's by the watershed. So the, when it came back, it was those two watersheds are approved, and you add the acres of those two watersheds, and 1,000 acres. So we requested that we need this designation within these two six quarter watersheds. So you think that's like the little dot surrounded by this watershed. So the request came, he said, okay, Grand Bruce, they looked up the two watersheds, and they do it in terms of acres, because the approval says this will now be added to what the Daniel Boone has and what the Cherokee has.
In the states of Kentucky and Tennessee.
You know, this many 100,000 acres here and 1,000 acres here. So it was peculiar to how those requests are granted, not what the between the lakes desired to do or needed to do here.
And I think that is the point that actually led to some of the confusion, is the fact that as it was pinned, my desk and my legal person, we were very specific to ask for, it might have been 6,500, now I think it was north and south, but if you go back to the actual NEPA documentation, which was analyzed, I think the upper constraints of that was only 4,500 acres. The reason for that is that we were dealing with the constraints of Fish and Wildlife Service, endangered species. We were also dealing with the known impacts of the storm and the actual acreage figures that GTAC had provided of those most severely damaged areas. So when we got back, I didn't look at how much they gave us. All I saw was we have an opportunity to begin work on this project to try to clean up this incident or this event, not realizing that all this other stuff was going out in the periphery. So to that point, I think it was a misunderstanding that led to what you may perceive as us trying to be not transparent or not available with information, because we didn't see it that way. I was focused on 4,500 acres. This is 2,200 of that really is what the damage was. Some of that outside was just allowing us to get into it, and we were trying to return those areas to a usable, safe format or condition for the rest of our public users. And I recognize another point that you've made is that after the event, that some of the areas that you may have held near and dear were clear. But with 1.7 million visitors every year, that equates to about 10 visitors per square acre. There's a high probability and likelihood that some of those areas that you may not hold near and dear, somebody else does. And we want to provide every one of our users the opportunity to recreate in those areas that they hold near and dear safely, or as safely as we can.
Sir. Hypothetical. We have another December tornado.
It's not hypothetical, that one.
It's going to happen, right? Uh-huh.
Would you do everything over again the same way you did it, or have we learned anything?
My inclination would be to not let this happen to us again. And what I mean by that is I would like to have these conversations in advance. I would like to have the NEPA decisions on the shelf for, emergency sort of situations like this, whether it's an insect or disease outbreak or a tornado or an ice storm or anything else that could impact us. And have those conversations in advance. Let's put the decisions on the shelf so that we all know what to expect when these things do happen. And, I've got some expectations. I'm sure there are lots of expectations around the table, but that's how I would like to do business. So if you're asking if I would, I would not request another emergency authority, because I don't plan to need an emergency authority. I plan to have the conversations in advance.
This advisory board doesn't have to wait 6 months for a meeting, right? We could request a meeting. Could we go out there and look at some of the sites? Because, again, I think if you go out there and look at it, what you're describing, it sounds good. But you go out there and look at it, there is a whole lot of area that was cut that was not damaged.
I think that's a very fair point. I'm going to answer with I don't fully know. We have inquired about the option to form subcommittees, and we're not getting solid answers right now from the folks that tell us how we have to manage these things. So the answer is, if there's interest in that, and if we can solve some of the controversy around this by going out and looking at it, I'm happy to look into that and get back to the board.
For the board, to meet, there's the Federal Register, there's notice, there's,
yep.
there's and your schedule's mentioned up and having a quorum. And so it's not easily done, but it's not impossible either. Because another thing we talked about last time, I said to the last one, like, do you want to have to appeal? What do we want to do? It's just, with it being a backup board, there's a lot of steps that have to be taken. We can't just, it's not like throwing a going away party or something like that and everybody show up. And it's not like potluck. There's certain rules we have to meet when it's a backup board. And but if you're interested in that, we can pursue that and then see how schedules line up and timing and then what we have to do as far as getting those things done. Our next meeting would be in April or so, or March, and it might take us that long to get together. So one of the things to ponder and give us some advice on is, would we want to try for, say, a two-day meeting next time. One day is a field trip. It's March. The next day we meet in here. So, some options there.
You'd be better off seeing it before March, though.
Before it greens up?
Yeah, yeah. Before it greens up, you'd be better off seeing it before it greens up.
And so some questions I have, too, is what if we just said we're having a field trip and, you know, anybody's welcome? You know, that's a possibility, too. That way it's not a packet thing.
Yeah.
And please don't give us advice while we're out there.
Right. That literally, he said that jokingly, but that's literally the litmus test. If we can go out and we can look and we can talk about the science, we can talk about perspectives, simply cannot collect advice.
Okay, but all in all, open to whatever you'd like to do. We just have to make sure we can do it.
So if we do that, then when we have our meeting in April, from what we've gleaned from that field trip, we can bring advice.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
But I think the field trip is a great idea because I think there's a lot of confusion on not just my part or David's part or anyone else's. I think all of us, you know, that we don't understand fully the impact of 86,000 acres, what that really meant. And I just think we need that clarification. We need to be out there. We need to see what's been done. And then when we come back in April, you know, we've been able to wrap our heads around it.
So, okay, go ahead, Ben.
I have 2 points I want to make. How soon do you need to have a decision from us, first of all? Secondly, we can use drone footage to take pictures of the area and send it to everybody online. So you don't have to physically go. Right. Drone footage can demonstrate what it is.
I love the drone idea. I'll see if Rick will give me a drone module.
I've got drone footage on here, but I don't have that.
To your second or first point about how quickly we need a decision, not really looking for a decision. Simply providing advice and updates, and it is painfully obvious to me that this situation unfolded poorly and that we've got something to learn here, and so that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for what it is I can learn, what can we do differently. Ski's advice, I think, was spot on. More communication, more transparency.
Timely communication, too.
Well, I would like to suggest that we have a 2-day learning about trees session in February.
Okay.
Those who want to come and attend, you can. And we can learn all about forestry practices and all those types of things and how they impact the land and the watershed. I think if you did that in February, I think that would be a great time to do that. That's just a suggestion.
And it'll take some February, I guarantee you.
Yeah. Oh. And we should be able to see it.
Okay. I got one other question.
Yes, ma'am.
This brought my attention that they're asking questions, what is the plan? And I think the plan, you haven't got a plan yet for what the reforestation is going to be for the tornado cleanup or the 86,000 acres, if you were to do that. You don't have a reforestation plan as such yet.
The thing with it is the 86,000 acres that keeps being brought up was never a part of our request. So that is technically outside of the scale and scope of these projects that we're speaking to. Right?
So what do you have?
These acres here are the ones that we really want to focus in on. It's just this. 86,000 was not, you know, when this event happened, from my perspective, and I can only give you what happened with me the morning of, the next day. The second or the third person I called was you, David. I picked up the phone and I said, David, I don't know what happened, but apparently we had 2 storms go across. We don't know what the scale and scope is. As I know more, I will share that with you. I hung up the phone. I then began to amass my people, and we began to go out and start looking about what things were. So, you know, we Once we got that, then we got the GTACs, and then we got all these other people involved, and they helped us to narrow the scale and scope of it. And that's when we began to come up with a plan. But as far as the notification, my top three immediate notifications, Dave Nichols, Davis Monger, and Jim Sheff. It's been that way for the last 7 years since I've been here. One, two, three. And those are immediate because I understand the social licenses at play. I also understand the amount of interest and the amount of concern that those individuals have for this piece of ground. And I want to make sure that before we begin to try to figure out what our paths are, that they are aware that there has been an incident or an event. A prime example of that was where we had a miscue. Was 3 years ago, we had basically a ground off of some of our oak trees because we had a late frost. It killed the top of a lot of trees. I picked the phone to Davis and Dave, and I said, I think we have oak decline. As I know more, I'll share with them. Remember that conversation? And that, say, what happened was, that information was never shared widely. But I let them know, because they are the interested public. They were the ones who were representing the group. As we found more information, it was a miscue, and we moved forward, right?
Right. We brought the pot and stuff from home.
But we fixed it. Collectively, we fixed it. And that's typically how we do things.
I'd like to circle back to Steve's point just to make sure we captured that. But and I'm having a little trouble remembering, but you mentioned the 86,000 acres, and just real clear, I'm putting that back where it came from.
Okay, that's no problem. Okay, right. The question was asked to me to ask that question.
Okay, all right.
Okay, but then the next part of that question comes, it's the timber harvest now from the salvage cuts. Mm-hmm. Do you have a plan to reforest that?
We do not. And we act yet. on the agenda.
Yet.
Yet. On yes. the agenda in the the upcoming resource management projects, I do hope to discuss that.
Okay.
If I may, at the risk of being too verbose, I have a quick analogy to compare what I believe, and I have not been involved in this. I've worked for the state, not the federal government. I'm getting this the same as every other board member as far as how this happened. It sounds like to me what happened was you all asked for authority to do this extent of remediation or over treatment. Folks at the federal level, I assume, made a decision to give you the capacity to do a much larger area if needed.
It's a collaboration with state and federal government.
State and federal, okay, yes. Gotcha. And so the analogy I would have is like John works in a regional office for Kentucky Fish and Wildlife. I work at headquarters. In our chain of command, he may have in his region a project, a wetland project. He wants to, based on the previous project of similar scope and size and land features and that kind of thing, he may say, well, we anticipate this project is going to cost $100,000 to build this well. And so he proposes that, puts together a budget, sends through a requisition. When it gets to us, because of other factors we're aware of that, okay, we know if it happens to exceed a certain amount, let's say it exceeds $250,000, we know we've got to get Office of State Budget Director's approval. We may have to go before a legislative committee if it's a large contracting project. And that could take years as opposed to doing the project operationally in a year. And so I say, okay, well, let's add, we have the authority, the capacity to add to his budget that $100,000 project. Let's make it $250,000, get the approvals on the front end. This is what I'm sort of editorializing or assuming what happened is the folks at the national level said, we could help you out, give you more authority to address these situations that come along in the future by giving you capacity to do up to, a much larger area.
Yes, sir. That's
86,000 acres.
What happened? Good analogy. So an idea got pumped into the machine, and the machine did what it does to ideas. And it came back as,
not what you asked for exactly. Maybe right. Well-intended at the national level, but it created ripple effects where if I put that in his budget, some people would be like, wait a minute. He asked for $100,000. Why are you putting $250,000 in there? It's like, well, the people don't understand, and some of the publics wouldn't understand. Are you doing a 50,000-acre area instead of a 1,000-acre area wetland, or whatever the case might be? So it sounds like there was, unfortunately, collateral damage with well-intentioned policy provision at the national level. For people.
I believe that's a solid analogy.
Well, I just want to make sure one thing about with, you know, obviously you ask for this, but you get this, right? And I do know that, and I'm not, there's no saying that the government give it and the government take it away, right? So if they give it, then it's $86,000. The question I have as a county extension person, knowing that the gypsy moth and the emerald ash borer is out there, will having the authority for the $86,000 help y'all fight that? If that, because I know the gypsy moth was found over there in Rutherford County, Tennessee. So that's not that far from here. Will that help you? Because I would hate to give that up and then we get an infestation. And we can't predict the future. No one can. But
I'm a little unclear whether it would or not, whether it would or not, should we choose to retain the authority. Because the Health and Forest Restoration Act was not included in the most recent Farm Bill, so it's not, it wasn't continued. So ongoing projects can continue. Now, I'm not certain if that's the designation stands or if any projects tied to, I'm not sure if I can put a new project in under this. So it's unclear to me.
Because I saw the damage of the Emerald Ash Borer up there in Pennsylvania. And we don't want it. But
we don't want it.
So I'm just saying, I would hate to lose a tool that could help.
So I
manage it.
Good point. And so I want to be, you know, I do not want to put us in a spot where we're disarmed or where we can't respond. My preferred pathway is to get ahead of it, do an advance, you know, in collaboration with advice and put some useful tools, useful decisions on the shelf so that when things do happen, we can respond in a quick fashion, you know, as would be an emergency response. We've got to do this fast. We've already had the conversations. And, we know what to expect.
Okay. Did you have some?
Nope. Okay. I'm good. What I'm going to do is my next slide, I'm going to go to answer some of the questions that have been out there as well. All right, there we go. This is some of the questions that you all were asking. At this stage, as of yesterday, the different cells. Clay Bay is two divisions completed. There's two more. So that will be completed here within probably about a month and a half, 2 months. Then that one's done. JB South cell, 90% of the cutting. 2 weeks of cutting is left. It's at 90% complete. So that one will be done in a month. Hauling, they'll cut for 2 weeks, to haul 4 weeks, and they're done. Then they have to do all the closeout. As far as Fort Henry, 98% of that one's done. Mammoth, 98%. Everything in red is closed. So, for the good of the board, most of these contracts were set up for 2-year contracts. Because of using the tools that we had, we were able to get out. We were able to get in front of this. We were able to get these areas cleaned up. We were able to recover as much revenue as possible, as practical. And you see where we are. We're about done.
I want to inject, John mentioned contracts. So the way we deliver, the way we sell timber is through contract. We are the purchaser, the logger, is contractually obligated to us and us to them through the contract. And that's where we embed mitigations, you know, like best management practices and things such as that. And that's where we contractually obligate them to cutting certain areas in certain ways. You do this here, and you can't do that here. So just to be clear, that's how we just deliver the thing.
That's the teeth of the dog, so to speak. At the bottom here, first thing, $3.8 million has been generated from these option projects to date. $3.87 million were generated to date. I'm going to say that one more time just for the effect. $3.87 million of revenues were generated for LBL to date. We still got 2 sales left to go. So there's a probability likely, that number's going up. Exactly how much I don't want to speculate, but it is going up. Now, what is the significance of that? How much did it cost LBL to do this cleanup work? Who's going to do it? That's the answer that I usually got when I asked who was going to help us clean it up. Our purchasers were willing to give us $3.87 million as of yesterday to go out and clean up something that we were going to have to clean up. Our budgets annually will not have allowed us to do this. Today, I'm actually pausing for a reason here. These areas that were heavily impacted, that were unusable by our public in a safe manner, generated $3.87 million that will be going back into the union. The next thing down, next thing down is cell area improvement plans. Why is that on there? A cell area improvement plan is an actual guiding document that my staff has been tasked with developing that will tell us down to the penny and out to the year exactly where these funds are going and what they are designated to do. So it's not like we're just going to haphazardly and willy-nilly, you know, somebody needs another truck or somebody needs to know. These are things, there's a certain percentage of these funds that have to go back into that impact zone. Have to, quote, it's got to go. It's like NFF, National just Reforestation Fund.
National Forest Management Act requires any area we do active timber management that we have to ensure that healthy forest is grown back after that activity. And that's to ensure that, you know, nobody is just going out for high value timber and then forgetting about it. So the high it's intended to give us access to stable funds that aren't associated to appropriations. And to ensure that we've got the money to do what we need to do for the health of the resource.
Yes. The first thing on most of these lists is guess what? Cultural research surveys. Why is that? Because what did I say in the beginning? I wasn't able to, or nor could I in good faith, ask anybody to go out and go over, around, and through the stuff to figure out what was there. Now that we can see the ground, guess what we can do? We can figure out what's there. So the efforts that were lost initially, or if the perception is that we didn't care about what was there, had creeped into any of your all's mind, that's not the case. I just couldn't say from putting anybody out there. But now that there's an opportunity, we can see the ground and we can do intensive surveys. That is the first thing on all of these cell area improvement plans, is to be able to go out and document with clear ground what was there.
So just to inject part of the process. So most typically, the cultural and heritage resource surveys are conducted in advance of any kind of resource management activity. However, in the case of something like this, tornado damage, where you literally can't see the ground in some areas and you can't get through it to conduct surveys, we've got some special dispensation from the State Historic Preservation Office to do post-activity surveys. So now that we're, you know, concluding operations, we have that, and that's written into the decision that was part of the environmental analysis and the decision document. So now that the sales are concluding, we have an immediate responsibility to do post-activity surveys. And we have $3.87 million with which to start that. So.
And that will include the botanicals. What we're expecting to find in some of these areas that have been uncovered and have had an opportunity to grow, we're already starting to see some of the heirloom species that some of the former residents may have seen on the ground here as kids. They're coming back. So some of those sensitive species, some of those rare populations that were gone from here, they're already starting to express themselves in different areas. Now we're going to be able to document that. And also, as we alluded to, because we didn't have a plan on what was next, we can build a plan to recover what is there. And this group has the opportunity and has the obligation to advise us on what that plan looks like. How do we get there? How do we enhance? How do we encourage these species on the landscape? It's not us as a, you know, subject matter experts in the building now. It is us as a group that will get to that point. These plans will be in play before we start expending funds. That's a big thing. And with these plans, And I do have a, I do have an example that I'd be more than happy to show anyone that wants to see it. It is pretty complex. It is pretty down to the penny, literally. They go 5 to 10 years out, and they're signed by Jim, or our area super. So it is a real document. It's not just a wag. And so we will do this on this, and we will do that here, and we will do this here. And then because of the way it's set up, it's also tracked by the regional office. So we're held accountable at multiple levels to get these things done.
And I'll add just a little bit. So sale area improvement planning is a fairly standard thing for all other national forest units. And it's tied to a law that's called the Knudsen-Vandenberg Act, which is responsive to the National Forest Management Act as well. And so, and basically what it does is give ranger districts and national forests access to those timber sale receipts to reinvest back in the area that the timber came from. And so that frees the things, because a lot of these are very time sensitive. Like if, you know, based on the site, if we don't get a prescribed burn fee there within, you know, before year three, we're not going to have advanced regeneration of oak, and then we're looking at a lot more money to start planting trees and things such as that. So very time sensitive stuff that Congress may or may not know about. And so, but we know about it. So we've got access to the money, and we can, you know, therefore plan that money out. But it's a very rigorous process, and, you know, it spans out over years. We do this year, we do that next year, and so it accounts for the money. It accounts for the money. We don't have a process like that here at Land Between the Lakes because the Knudsen-Vandenberg Act does not apply to us directly. We need to meet its intent, but it doesn't apply to us. We retain all of our receipts here at Land Between the Lakes. So, but we need to mimic that process, and because the one awesome thing it does for us is provide real great transparency on where the money's going and what we're doing with it. And we have some luxuries here that don't exist on other units. For example, we can fund recreation facilities out of this money that other units don't necessarily have the luxury to do because of the constraints of the law. We can fund environmental education activities. So this particular sale is a little bit enigmatic because we have the immediate responsibility because of the decision to do those post-harvest cultural and heritage resource surveys. So that's kind of got to come off the top. And then we have to go into required reforestation activities. And so we have to certify that regeneration, that, you know, new healthy forest is starting to grow 1 year and 3 years, according to the National Forest Management Act. So that means that my folks got to move heaven and earth to make sure maybe trees are growing out there by year three. And so then after that, and there's still money, then, you know, we've got other options. And one of the things that I was considering is, you know, why not our environmental education facilities are not money makers for us here. They're expensive. So why not tie timber sale receipts in a hard and transparent way to environmental education by signing some sort of consignment, like a 5% of timber sale receipts are dedicated to environmental education. It's just an idea. We have those. I'm not saying that's a plan or, you know, the plan, but I'm just saying we have those luxuries and those planning opportunities here that we don't have in other places, and so it's a unique opportunity.
So that's how we could fund our February February learning about trees on 2 days. That's right. Okay, gotcha.
So, and normally, what, you know, things we would program in, like a certain percentage of every project area is merchantable timber. That is, somebody wants to buy that from us because it's very valuable. But then there are other areas of a project that aren't valuable timber. They haven't been treated well silviculturally, or they've, you know, had some impact, and so we use that money from the merchantable timber to invest into non-commercial treatments in the areas where, you know, we couldn't make them all interested.
Jim, one question. Under this act, the end goal of this impacted area is to be reforested.
Yes, sir.
There's no opportunity to
take advantage in a way of what's happened and maintain that for more open land or scrub shrub from a wildlife standpoint?
So, to direct to that, we have every opportunity. To the degree that it's consistent with the land resource management plan, yes, we can manage. We can and often do as resource managers take advantage of natural impacts, a tornado or an ice storm or some other impact. If it was a lucky break and advanced in the direction that the forest plan says we need to be going, absolutely we can leverage that. Good question. Yes, ma'am.
Steve would know this. Is that Fort Henry where Dover owns?
No, that's Fort Donelson. Fort
Henry is
on land between the lakes. The actual fort's underwater, but there is an outer earthworks that are inland between the lakes.
I know I went down there because Fort Donelson, Susan took me down.
Right, yes.
So it's the same area.
Well, Fort Henry's on land between the lakes, and Susan from Fort Donelson took you there, yes.
So?
It's a trilogy of forts. Fort Hyman, Fort Henry, and Fort Donelson's the campaign. Mm-hmm. But it's actually owned by Forest Service now.
But it needs to be an anthropological study. Down.
There's been several studies, and there needs to be more now.
Yeah. Because that's missing. Because there was a lot of enslaved Africans down here.
Yes.
And it needs to be more research. So, because this might be you or something like that.
That's one of those things that I was going to kind of segue into, if I may.
Okay.
With these funds that are generated, would LBL be different? And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I'm saying that we're not limited by the normal constraints of KB or the Newsom-Vandenberg Act, which is typically a half mile outside of Tabor and about. The entirety of this unit is where those funds can be used. So what these plans have, what we have the ability to do with these plans, through advice and through conversation and consultation, is answer those, have those questions answered. We can actually put that this sale is going to support this activity, and they may be in different states. Once we've satisfied that NFF, that initial, once we've satisfied any of those other things that we have to do, and we have what we call a bid premium, which is all this over here, now we can start putting in those things line by line. Okay, let's say, Dr. Dawson, what you're asking for, let's say it was $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
We have $50,000 available. Guess what? We can have this conversation. It becomes priority one. Let's just say we have another $15,000. And somebody says, there's a culvert over here off this road, small culvert, and it's $12,000. Consensus of the group is that that's a priority. That could be number two. And then, we want to plant grass. Let's kind of pull that one out. Over here at the visitor center. And that's $4,500. Well, we got $3,000 left, but we'll put $3,000 towards this, and then the other $1,500, will come from someplace else. We are only limited by our creativity in the SEI plans. Once we satisfy that, the have to, and there's premium, now we can be creative and we can actually start funding stuff at some of the our EE facilities or some of our campgrounds or some of the other things that we're going to talk about here a little bit later on. There are a lot of opportunities out there that we can bring forward that we haven't been, because we've not found ourselves in a position where we were able to generate revenue or funds outside of what was built and what was made in the campgrounds and spent in the campgrounds. Outside of, what is made for in the hunt program and spent in the hunt program, whatever that is. This provides us an opportunity to generate revenues above and beyond so we can do what we haven't been able to do in a sustainable fashion. So, with that being said, sorry for being long-winded.
Any input or questions from the folks that have joined us remotely?
Thank Actually, I'm on.
Oh, what?
No. I think I lost it.
Can we get a copy of those slides? Or will we get a copy of those slides?
If you like them.
I'd love to have a copy of those slides.
Be more than happy to make sure you get them.
Thank you.
I'd like a copy too.
So I'm good.
Can you just send all of them?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll make sure everybody has copies.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.